everybody. Welcome to the last Speakeasy podcast episode of 2020. My name is Kate.
My name is Alan. We are from ReverseThieves.com, and if you want to get in contact with us, you can contact us at ReverseThieves@gmail.com, or just leave a comment on our ReverseThieves.com. We don't get that many, so I'll probably listen to it.
And this is not like a shorter episode, I would say, because we are going through two big chunks of shows, but it's more focused. So we are participating in the Anime Secret Santa project. So that's kind of the first half of the episode.
And the second half, we will be talking about The Great Pretender as a whole. We talked a little bit about the first arc in the sneak preview, but we'll be talking about that whole arc and the series as a whole, all four parts?
Yeah, or like season two, I think, according to Netflix. I don't know. It's a little bit weird about how they as in Netflix, sort of defined it, but it's really just the full series.
So I always like to start any Secret Santa project with what shows we got and then why we picked the one that we did. At least when I did them solo, that's how I always started. So we got three choices. The first one is my fault for being dumb. I will totally admit that. I had forgotten to put a place farther than the universe on my list, and someone recommended being like, I think you'd like that show. And I was like, I did. Why didn't I put it on my list? I'm a dummy dumb.
It's so easy to let, you know, something fall through the cracks. Also, speaking of that show, I was like, you know what? I don't have that on Blu-ray. I should really get it. And then I was like, oh, that's because no one has licensed it. So get on that, Discotech, or somebody else. Why hasn't that show been licensed? It's one of the best series of the last decade.
So, great show. Good choice. I would have asked for a second, third choice. But since the other two were so solid, I was just like, yeah, forget about it. My dumb mistake. Not the person who recommended it to me. So, let's look at the other two shows. One was Cyber City 8080, which I've just never seen. Not because I don't like it, or like I was like, I'm avoiding this show because of X, Y, or Z. Just never got around to it. Always heard good things about it. Seems like a show up my alley. Just never watched it. And I always like to save like a short show just in case I can't, like, I've fallen behind or something comes up. So like, let me save this one just in case I can't finish my longer show. So I could just knock it out and be like, yeah, I did the show. And of course, I did it on time. Woo!
That would be a good one to rewatch. I haven't seen it in many, many years. And is it licensed? That's another one I should check.
It was definitely licensed in the past. By like,
oh yes, I mean, I know that, but is it like out of print? Yeah,
it feels like something that, like, if Discotech hasn't picked it up, it probably is like thinking about. But instead, since I got Kate to agree, also the fact that neither of us had seen the show that we did pick, I thought was like a little cooler for Secret Santa. As Kate mentioned, she already saw Cyber City. So we both decided to, A, come back to the Secret Santa project, and B, watch Lupin the Third Part 1. Kind of the, I'd say, both famous and infamous part of Lupin the Third, as opposed to Part 3, which is just infamous. No one has ever, like, oh boy, Pink Jacket, a fun time I remember. Or if they do, they keep that to themselves, lest other Lupin fans point and laugh at them.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I wouldn't call myself a Lupin fan. Like, I like Lupin, and I've seen, you know, good sizable amount of, you know, various movies, OVAs, TV series of Lupin. And I enjoy my time in general, you know, obviously with a really, really long running franchise like this, your mileage may vary, and there is a real roller coaster of quality in the just overall, in all of the history. So, so I just have never gone this far back into the back catalog of Lupin.
And I think Lupin is also one of those franchises that, like you said, is all over the place, and a lot of people have like kind of a Lupin in their head. And like that's their Lupin, and some people are like a fan of the whole franchise, but I think this first series informs a lot of why that is.
Well, first, Al, what is your opinion of Lupin? I mean, do you consider yourself a Lupin fan? How do you center yourself?
I'd say I'm a Lupin fan, but like a light Lupin fan. Like, I've not watched all of Lupin. I definitely have like the selected parts. I mean, I watched Cagliostro just because it was so referenced, and like it was on so many people's lists, and you know, it was by Miyazaki. And then I watched, you know, just random, like you, random other parts of, and you know, like you said also, at that point, it's very variable of like, you know, do you watch a cool special or one of the dud specials? Do you watch a cool episode or a dud episode? It's, you know, it's always kind of a roll of the dice unless you do a lot of research and know not only the show, but like, not only like do the research for the reviews, but like, how much do you sync with the reviewer? Because it is that much over the place that, like, it could almost feel like different characters if you're not paying attention. I know a lot of people get in through Cagliostro and then, like, have no idea what they're getting into when they go and watch other parts.
And I think that could even be said of, I mean, I think we've really enjoyed more recent TV Lupin series, like Blue Jacket, I think is what, how it would be referred to. I don't think I've seen all of, like, there's, I think, some movies and, some, you know, there's, again, it just, like, keeps expanding. But I think in general, we've really enjoyed some of the more recent iterations.
Well, the two main iterations now are the Fujiko Mine universe, and it's like assorted movies and OVAs, and then Blue Jacket, which I've enjoyed. I thought the French adventures and the Italian adventures were really good. I've really talked up that I thought the Italian adventures were this amazing tribute to the whole series, and really, really good. But I was very curious to go back to Green Jacket, which is the first TV iteration, because it was the one that was canceled. Like, it wasn't even that it just did bad. It was basically, you're done. Those three episodes that you had planned? Nah. They're gone. But you could also just tell, and we'll go into this, that they knew by the end that was going to happen, because you stopped seeing them do episode previews. So this was not like a super surprise to anybody on board. But But it's also worked on at points by Hayao Miyazaki and Takahata. And, you know, it's got some big names attached to it. So, you know, it's not like, oh, it was the stinky Lupin that everybody hated. And then the good Lupin came with Red Jacket. Like, they're definitely defenders and champions of the first season. So I was very curious to see, like, what... And I'll go into this later on. But there was a very distinct reputation that I knew about this season. So I was very curious to see what, when I saw the show, what my opinion of it would be. And I feel like my opinion is different than, my impression of the show is different than the very vague impression that I had gotten beforehand. But I don't think people misled me. I think I just had that very vague impression that is different when you actually see the show and get a more nuanced opinion. Because I don't feel the opinion I got was wrong. I just feel like when I actually watched the show, I was like, oh, okay. This is actually how it is, not this like very cursory blended opinion of the whole season. So did you have any like thoughts before going in?
No, actually, I didn't really know too much about the production history, although that there's a lot of weird production stuff going on that, like, you don't need to read the Wikipedia. I mean, obviously you would get a more in-depth information about, like, what was going on, but, like, just watching the show, I expected it to be different, just because I know, not having actually read the original Monkey Punch manga, but just knowing that it's that is supposed to be significantly different, I sort of like, oh, right, well, I know, whatever, through osmosis, that Lupin himself has, like, changed a lot over the years, so I figured it would be different. But, yeah, I got a real history lesson on the series by watching it, and... yeah, so I didn't go in with a lot of expectation.
Yeah, I only went in with what I knew, and I didn't read any of the production details till about halfway through, when I'm like, what is going on with this tone? I have to look now, because I was going to save that till the end. But I'm like, about halfway through, I had to look into it, because I was like, this is not what I expected. I knew that it had a different tone than part two, which I've seen a decent amount of. I mean, I've seen only about a third of it, but that's still, for considering how long season two is, a pretty significant chunk of episodes. But I was like, because the reputation that I guess to go right into it, the reputation that I had was that part one was the grittiest, and it was the truest to the original Monkey Punch manga, which I have read, at least parts of. Like, there's obviously a core there that was turned into the property that we know. But, And I knew that at points, two of the main Studio Ghibli founders, Hayao Miyazaki and Takahata, had worked on episodes. And then it was canceled. And then years later, it was brought back as Red Jacket, and they made changes, and they made it more family friendly, and that was the one that took off. And then pink jacket overcompensates and makes it like totally slapstick and kitty, and that is the one that nobody likes. And then past that point, the franchise kind of just swings back and forth depending on the iteration between those three versions, and, you know, even sometimes its own versions. And essentially, at that point, you have to, like, look into what Lupin are you getting whenever you get Lupin, because it could be anywhere in there.
But what I find so interesting, as you said, Al, it got canceled, and throughout the production, even this, just this 23 episodes, not even thinking about further afield, the tone is, like, all over the place. Depending upon the episode, it's just, you know, there's wild swings. It gets a little more consistent towards the end of the season. But what I find so interesting is that... I don't know how to phrase it exactly, but... I'm so surprised. It's almost like watching this made me so surprised that it became a, like, iconic cultural phenomenon, because, like, it's just so all over the place. And so, like, I'm just kind of amazed that anybody had, like, this is how creative these people working on it must have been, because just watching this first season, it's hard to imagine anyone going to this and being like, you know what we should do? We should bring this back. Like, this, like, that people had enough faith in, like, the kernels that end up popping up kind of near the end of this show to then try to do it again. I think that's very, I don't know, it speaks to maybe ambition or being bananas or, like, I don't know. I just find it very interesting that they were willing to go basically, like, back to the well on this, because this season is so wild.
I mean, that's why I had to research it, because I'm like, what is this tone? Like I said, I had always heard that it was the grittier one, and then they lightened him up in two. And so I expected a consistent, like, noir kind of tone. And that two, he becomes kind of the lighthearted scamp that would be more, you know, would eventually go on to make the Cagliostro Lupin. And then, like, you know, later iterations would be various blendings. And I was like, but I expected a very consistent tone in one. Kind of like the much more consistent tone of later parts. Or, you know, individual sections have their own tone, but they're generally consistent in their own iteration. Part two has a very distinct tone. Three, each of the movies, all that. But yeah, no, I was like, what is going, I have to, like, I cannot wait until the show is over. I have to see what was going on behind the scenes here, if I could find out, because this is crazy town. But from what I understand, what happened was they just threw it into reruns a lot. And then people kind of really dug the second half. So they brought, and, like, it started basically kind of like Gundam developing this fan, like, big fan following through the reruns. And so they brought it back, and, you know, I mean, apparently, Miyazaki and Takahata do a bunch of episodes in part two. And, like, you can, like, find the list of, like, here are the, you know, Miyazaki and Takahata episodes if you want to see them. And he basically has, like, an episode where, like, Lupin has to save, like, Proto Nausicaa, who's trapped in a big giant robot. So, like,
Yeah, I mean, I know you did the comparison to Gundam, but like, I definitely see what you're saying. You know, the reruns really, maybe the reruns, they didn't even show some of like the early episodes. I think that's maybe possible. It's just so interesting because, you know, Gundam, it got canceled, but it was like a vision from the beginning. Like it had like a clear, it was like, maybe my vision is not resonating with you guys, you know, like with the audience, right? But it was like pretty like consistent, like, this is my vision. Whereas like Lupin, you know, it's clear that like different people and different writers and different directors, they're just like throwing things at the wall in like at least half, probably more than half these episodes, because like even like, you know, Lupin overall doesn't have like a big plot arc, you know, like, but there's like certain things that are like certain touchstones that sometimes appear and sometimes don't, or like, it's just like, because there's so many people, clearly they were just like, we don't know every, like, people don't like it. We have to change things here. Let's try this. Let's try this. Let's try this. You know, okay, new episode, try this. Just like trying to figure out what was working. So it's just interesting to me that that eventually like coalesced and like resonated in some way, because it wasn't, it's not a clear vision at all.
So I guess the question I have for you, Kate, is do you want to just do a quick summary, or do you want to just, like, everybody knows who Lupin is. That's like doing a quick summary of Batman, and we should just go into.
Yeah. Do we really need to?
You know, the funny thing also is, having read the original manga, the original manga is all over the place, because when they introduce Jigen and Goemon, they die in the stories that they're introduced. Lupin kills both of them in his initial confrontation with them. But then, essentially, they just, without real explanation, come back. And they're like, when they come back, it kind of sets the tone. Like, from that point on, Jigen is always just a dude who's basically Chewbacca to Lupin's Han Solo. He like owes him a life debt. How much they explain it depends on which iteration of Lupin it is, and they're like bestest buddies, and like the initial story where they fought each other and Lupin kills Jigen just vanishes forever. That one never, like, people just seem to like that Lupin and Jigen are these hetero life mates, or depending on certain interpretations, maybe more, and like that is forever there. He is always Lupin's snarky but loyal right-hand man. And past that point, usually Goemon has like a initial like antagonistical introduction to Lupin, but eventually they kind of have a mutual understanding. And if they ever need a cast member to not be in the group, it's Goemon, because he's always kind of like, I work with Lupin when I want to.
I'm a wanderer.
Mm-hmm. And then Fuchiko is always kind of like frenemies with Lupin. But generally, every big-titted like girl in the original Lupin manga was just named Fuchiko. And they had no consistent person. And that's why she looks different in a lot of the versions. Because it just became like a running theme that like Fuchiko will just change her appearance on a whim. But like the original, there was no original. She was just, any girl that Lupin was interested in was originally just a Fuchiko. And then she eventually became his like frenemy love interest. And like,
well, that explains at least one very weird and confusing thing at the beginning of this show.
So I thought I'd mention that much. The other thing that makes it, you know, crazy is apparently the original director was basically fired 2 episodes in. Because
I stand behind that decision.
Because he wanted a very true to the original Monkey Punch manga in a kid's time slot. And the weirdness of the tone of that show definitely shows. And then they didn't fully get rid of him. So they bring in Takahata and Miyazaki to like work with him and finish up the episodes that he had started. And so like the first half of the series, and maybe even a little more than that, is like him finishing up all those episodes with Takahata and Miyazaki gradually gaining more control. And then like most of the back half is their show. And they trade off with various episode directors of the control of the show. And so that leads to the show that is like constantly changing who it is by how much which team is in control and how much they're in control. Because it's also weird because it starts off, Lupin is a killer who's generally amoral and generally only is our hero because he goes after people who are worse than him most of the time.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was one of the things that threw me the most at the beginning. Wasn't just that, like, Lupin is gritty or whatever, right? It was that, first of all, like, at least in the, a lot of the beginning, and at least the first 3 episodes, maybe just 2, Lupin is not a thief. Plotting to steal. He's like a, more like a, like an international man of mystery, James Bond kind of character, because there's like an evil organization that he needs to take out or whatever. I don't know. It's just, he's not a scheming thief who comes up with, you know, they come up with, like, they have a goal, they have a target, and they have this, like, grand plan to steal X. Like, so, I was really thrown by that. That is not really present immediately. And then the show, like, after episode 2, I think it is, they start putting an introduction on the show because clearly everyone was like, what the hell is this? Like, what is even going on? And then the introduction of the show, again, is like, they're a group of, you know, thieves or whatever. It's like, are they? Because they have not been doing, like, they're not stealing anything. That, like, this is not, they are foiling the plans of, like, evil organizations. I don't know what you guys think phantom thieving is, but it's not this. And like, so it's so weird that like, there's also like within its own show, there's like cross purposes of like, it's telling you things, but then also not doing those things. And like, they're doing character introductions with character designs that look nothing like the character designs in the actual show. It's just so bizarre.
I mean, apparently, most notably, like, Fuchiko is just, like, crazy sex object in the first half. And then they, like, make her still, I mean, she's still got biggins in the second half. But, you know, they're, like, reasonable sized. And she, like, can wear not always sexy outfits. She still wears sexy outfits from time to time. But, like, it is not mandatory that she is always in a mini dress and, like, cleavage falling out.
I mean, in the second half of the series, half of the time she has Miyazaki heroine hair. And I'm just like, who is that? Like, again, like, I understand that people really liked, you know, eventually really liked that version or whatever, but it was like, who is that supposed to be? Like, Miyazaki, just can you back it up a little bit? Because, like, come on. Like, that looks nothing like Fujiko.
It was like, what do you call it? This is my sister, Mount Heye. Co. Yeah, it's like the part that like really threw me was like Lupin's like murdered 30 in that like fight with Goemon on the highway, where he's like already murdered like 30 people in that episode, and there are all those car crashes and explosions, and then it's on the air that like, good thing no one was hurt in that huge pileup. And I was like, bullshit. You're having Lupin murder like 30 guys an episode, but you don't want him to kill any cops or anything.
But he murders like, he like blows up that whole stadium in the first episode, where it's just like, I don't think all of those people there were like part of this criminal organization. Like,
but it was like clear that like after that first episode, like the people were like, no, you can't have Lupin kill good people. He has to only kill criminals. And the director was like, fine, I guess he'll only kill criminals. And then eventually when Miyazaki and Takahata, he's like, no, Lupin goes out of his way to like outthink people, not kill them. But like, you've gone through like 3 iterations of Lupin before you get to that point. And you're like, what is the tone in this show?
I felt really uncomfortable with like the level of violence and like things that are done to Fujiko in like the first 5 to 10 episodes, I guess. Maybe not quite 10, but like there's just like a lot of violence against her. There's a lot of like, you know, groping of her, or like things happening to her, or like men who are like, you know, like the second episode is like basically like an abusive relationship. Like it's really like very gross the way that not just talking about like Fujiko's like a sexy, you know, a sexy seductress, like, sure, that's fine. But, like, just the way that she is treated. Although, I will say, there are a couple of, like, there's 2 things in here, though, that are clearly either from the original, I don't know if it's, like, the original Monkey Punch stories or not, but 2 things that actually stood out to me in regards to her character in these. Like, there's, like, a little bit of, like, that you know, like, there's, like, that infamous scene with Zenigata in A Woman Named Fujiko Mine. But, like, that is sort of, like, built a little bit on like, some things that happen in this original season. And then also, like, I think it's in A Woman Named Fujiko Mine, or is it in Blue Jacket? I know, I think it is. But, like, there's a lot of jokes about Goemon being Fujiko's boyfriend. Like, she's always just like, or like she'll be like, no, that's my boyfriend or whatever. And like, that's actually from this. And again, maybe that's in the original Monkey Punch story, I don't know. But like, I thought that, I was like, oh, those are like 2 little like interesting tidbits that, you know, like come back.
Well, I think, I mean, this is a little off topic, but it's still on topic, depending on how you look at it. I do feel like a lot of the modern Lupin, both Woman Called Mine Fujiko and Blue Jacket, have tried to like take all the various iterations of Lupin and like make an amalgam of what they think kind of like take the best of all those parts. And like Mine Fujiko has a much more noir, gritty feel, whereas since it is all movies and OVAs, like it can like do that. And whereas Blue Jacket is a much more TV friendly version of that. And like, once again, as I said, you know, the Italian Job version like makes references and like draws in parts from all the, you know, it's basically a huge love letter to all that of that, all the iterations. So yeah, I feel like the modern one tries to like smooth, like make a more consistent Lupin that takes in his whole history. So that kind of makes sense. And yeah, I feel like the Mine Fujiko universe kind of draws on a little more of the darker stuff, though. But I think in a very smart and modern way. Oh, I just had to mention, just because we're talking about Fujiko, that the one part where we meet Fujiko's old boyfriend and partner, do you remember his name? Which I found hysterical.
I don't remember.
Poon.
Poon. Like, there is a lot of, I think, like, I don't know if it's intentional or not. Like, in that case, I don't know either. But, like, there's a lot of maybe intentional, maybe that, like, are just background things. Or, like, yes, like, maybe that's an overt reference to something. Unclear. Since you brought up a funny one, Al, I will bring up my favorite, which was, like, one of the very, I think it's, might be the last episode, or, like, one of the very last episodes, that's, like, beaver jewelry is first rate, and it's just, like, and I just couldn't stop laughing about it, because we're, what, we're 11 years old, and is the link, so once we start getting, like we said, to, like, the Takahata, the Miyazaki kind of portions of the series, where it starts to get, where all the details of that train and like the wheels on every car are like drawn in this really precise way that is very Miyazaki looking, and then like it starts to really create like a totally different feel for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Because something that just visually, after episode 14, it just looks like a totally different show. Because, I mean, it still has a bunch of weird background stuff. And, like, again, maybe, like, some of that can just be chalked up to, like, it's, you know, it's back a long time ago. It's, like, early 70s. But, like, one of my consistent notes for the first half of the series was, where is this taking place? Like, what is this landscape? Where are they? Like, it would just be the weirdest, like, red rocks and, like, European house that they, I guess, was, like, their hideout? But, like, I don't know. Like, there was just a lot of, just if you, just looking at backgrounds and stuff, it was just very strange. There was no, it was like, this is no way this is Japan. Like, I don't know where this is, but like, but then later on, it is in Japan. Like, there's like a consistent, like, this is Japan. We have a hide. Oh, there's like that episode where they go to their hideout and there's like every plane and every car that they've ever used in a job or whatever. And there's like a history of like Lupin. And it was just, you can just see the Miyazaki, especially in like vehicles past a certain point in the series. But there, I think there's really distinct looks for the show. Well, the first half is, like, all over the place and has no distinct look except to be, like, what is happening. But the second half, I think, does start to, like, create. It has, like, that pseudo-steampunk, like, little bit in the background not as much as Miyazaki goes for, like, later in his, like, movies, but there's just, like, little hits of it, and, like, almost like a Sherlock Hound level of, like, the way the technology...
Well, I mean, there's the whole episode where he's trying to beat that counterfeiter guy who, like, was messing with him, and so he's trying to steal the world's best forger away from him. And there's this huge clock that is in the side of a mountain where him and his patron live. And it is so clearly like parts of that episode would go on to influence Cagliostro, even like that fight on the hands of the clock and all that.
Yeah, you could definitely see just so many, oh, he's just going to pluck this. Oh, he's going to pluck that out. And, like, you could, yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah, I remember that episode, too.
Yeah, it's just, I did not expect the show to be so wildly different from beginning to end. And, like, I wonder how much this influenced, like, essentially... I feel like so many directors past this point just basically took the Lupin that they remember, not necessarily like the quote-unquote canonical Lupin, because they're like, even in the first series, depending on which episode you want, it is a different Lupin. There's like three or four different Lupins in this season.
I mean, there's even later episodes. I don't want to give too much credit to the second half of the series, because there's even later episodes where, like, the humor level, like, gets skewed. And it's like, it goes like, there's like one episode where it gets like super wacky just for like an episode. And then it like comes back. And then like the final episode, even though there's like a lot more to like about the like ending episodes and stuff. Even the final episode, like, Fujiko and Jigen, like, are store owners and ever in the show. Hey, what is this? Like,
you know who is best friends in all of Lupin canon? Jigen and Fujiko.
Well, they did. They had separate stores.
Oh, okay.
But like, since when did... is that like their cover? It was just super weird and like was out of left field. Or there's like some episodes Lupin really cares about his ancestry, and it's like, well, that was news to me. Like, it's like some episodes it's like, no, it's like the honor of, it's like, what are you talking about? But then there are, like, there's some really good, solid episodes of, like, consistent heist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, a great, like, heist plot from beginning to end. You know, so that, like, there are moments, for sure. Al, I wanted to ask you, did you watch it sort of like in a marathon, or did you break it up, or how did you watch it?
I usually watched it about like 2 to 4 episodes. Sometimes less, depending on how I felt, how much Hayate I wanted to watch that day, how much I wanted to play mobile games. So I usually try to at least knock out 2 episodes a night. But I tried not to watch more than 4, lest I burnt myself out.
Yeah, because I felt, I mean, especially at the beginning, I found the show really hard to digest. But then also, it's not, I feel like Lupin, maybe in general, is not really a great marathon show, mm-hmm. because there's sort of like a formula, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, if you watch too many in a row, you're sort of like, Did I just watch this episode? Like, so I do think it doesn't always, you know, it's just one of those. That's not necessarily like a knock against it at all. It's just like I noticed it if I tried to watch too many in a row. It was like it really like diminished the fun of any episode if I liked it if I watched too many.
Yeah, no, that's why I spaced out. And, like, basically, the minute I was like, all right, I'm bored. I'm going to go and watch Hayate. Because that always makes me happy. Oh, man, I have... Not to get too off, I have thoughts about the first season. I really... Going back has made me realize some things about that first season, but... Of Hayate. But, that's neither here nor there. That was Al's Kijiro Hata break. It's very. I feel like I said in the beginning, the impression that I got from like very quick reviews, because I never like sat down and listened to a whole review of Lupin Part 1, was not incorrect. It is far grittier than Seasons 2 or 3, basically, Red Jacket and Green Jacket. And truer to the original Monkey Punch. And later episodes were directed by Takahata and Miyazaki. So, like, it wasn't like people lied to me or, like, misrepresented it. It was just that, like, I never dug deeper because I feel like if I had... They probably would have mentioned this crazy shift of tone all the way through. But it was definitely eye-opening. And, like, I did not realize. I just thought, like, once again, one was very gritty. And then it got canceled. But brought back into where it's much more kind of the, you know, amoral trickster with still, in the end, a good guy. Of Part 2.
Oh, he's a nice man. Is that what you mean?
Yes.
Lupin is a nice man.
Also, what were with those openings and that insert song? I feel like you have stuff to say about that, so I'll just... But they were... I think there is a reason that the Lupin the Third Part 2 opening has become the classic and not... The first two openings.
This fits in with the everything else about this show, honestly, because it's those songs though always get stuck in your head too, which is really annoying. Like it's so much worse. The songs, you know, are weird. They're very strange. The lyrics are repetitive and but also like don't make sense, which basically sums up a lot of this show. Like I know you said, Al, oh, it's, you know, like a grittier version, but it's also like makes no sense. Like a lot of the plotting, whether or not I wanted it to be gritty or not, like doesn't even factor into just making zero sense. Like that second episode about the magician, it's like what is happening? Like the whole thing is bizarre world. And so I feel like the music just fits in with that, because also they did not do I am not even a music person, but throughout this show they will put in this song, this slow song about Lupin and why he's a nice man and, you know, he uses his gun, but it's like a P-35, Kate. It's very slow, and they'll like put it in like in a chase scene, and you're like, "What are you doing?" That happens pretty consistently.
Did you pay way too much for the song and now just have to use it out of like, well, we paid for it, we're gonna use it.
It's like, this is not where this goes. This is not. And it happens throughout the show. And there's also, I think there's other songs too, where it's just, they just didn't know what song to put there, or they had none. Like you said, Al, maybe, or they only had this one. So they were like, well, we have to use it. And it's like, just silence would be, please.
Just like, have Jigen beatbox.
Preferable. Yeah, like, I found, you know, as a, you know, in a historical sort of sense, it was interesting, but I don't know if I would, like, unless that's your interest, unless you're just, like, interested in, like, the history of anime, I don't know if I would ever recommend, like, watching this. What do you think, Al?
Yeah, no, I mean, I feel, I mean, it gives me a little more insight into parts of, like, part four and five. And like, but I feel like I watched 4 and 5 fine, and I didn't feel like, ah, oh, now parts of 5 with, you know, are tributes to part 1. Now they finally make sense. Like, they did all those episodes in the style, like, better than a lot of these episodes. So, like, I don't feel like I lost anything. And I feel like the characters are, like, basic enough and, like, introduced quickly enough in later parts that you don't, it's not like you'll be lost if you, like, jump in Cagliostro, if you jump in A Woman Called Fujiko Mine, if you jump in parts 4 and 5, if you, you know, do any Blue Jacket. Heck, like, if you want to start anywhere, start with Red Jacket. They had to, like, totally reintroduce the character since he hadn't been on the air for, like, 9 years. And so, and those, you know, once again, that is, like, 100-and-something episodes. You know, lots of different directors. So, you know, not every episode is a winner there, but, you know, at least that's a more consistent Lupin, where, like, they have a general idea of who he is and, you know, what they want to present. So, yeah, I mean, like, to people like us who are, like, you know, care about, like, the history and, like, are more willing to, you know, slog through some stuff just to get deeper insight, there's definitely value to this. Or if, you know, you're doing any research into Miyazaki or Takahata, there's, you know, there's maybe something to be gained from this work, especially since parts of this would go on to influence their later works. But yeah, it's just a pure enjoyment. Yeah, it is a lot harder to recommend because it just, it's so all over the place, and like it, like, even if you really like one part of it, it's not the whole part of that series, because like 4 episodes down the line you're going to be looking at a different Lupin crew with like a completely different style to the episodes.
And I feel like even, I think that there's maybe like the last 10 episodes of this show are like the good episodes, and not even all of them are good. But I think there's less good than bad. Mm-hmm. In the episode count, I would say, in my opinion, like, there are more bad episodes than good ones. So, yeah, it's just a little bit hard to, you know, I mean, you can watch it for free on Crunchyroll. So I guess there's no, you know, like, investment.
It's also on Hulu, so like there's a bunch of places you can watch it. Okay. You will not be surprised to know that Monkey Punch thought the original director had the truest capture of a Lupin, the Monkey Punch experience that could be put into that time slot.
Yeah, that's why I said good riddance to that. Sorry, not interested. The Lupin that I have enjoyed is clearly not that Lupin and not your Lupin and is a totally different interpretation of him. And so therefore I thank you for your service, but I will no longer need you.
Who's the director of 20th Century Boys and Monster and the writer, I mean, the artist of those?
Urasawa?
Yeah, Urasawa. I also mentioned Urasawa thought that the Hayao Miyazaki and Takahata Lupin was the real Lupin. He's like that. Their version is like the Lupin that I feel is the one in my heart, and is the real Lupin.
I mean, I'm sure it just is one of those things where it depends on what your first, we've said this a lot for different long-running franchises, right? It's always like a lot, or not always, but it's oftentimes whatever your first introduction, you gravitate towards it, and I get it. I get it.
And then there's always a few people who like dislike a show until they find the one that like clicks the groove and like, nah, man, I know you didn't like it, but watch this version because this is the version that's gonna. But yeah, more often than not, it's the, you're the baby bird and it's the one you imprint on. It's the one that you like the most. One question before we move on. Were you burnt enough that, what do you call it, you would or wouldn't do Secret Santa again next year? Or like, no, I've learned my lesson, back to not doing it next year.
I think it depends on how long the show is. Because it took me a long time to watch these 23 episodes. So I feel like it's a little bit like, if I'm feeling trepidatious about something and it's 20 episodes or more versus I'm feeling trepidatious about this, but it's only 5 episodes. So, whatever. But yeah, I feel like in this case, though, different than previous bad experiences, not bad experiences, just shows I didn't like. I mean, it's not like anyone set out to give me a bad experience, but in this case, I did learn things, because it is from a very specific period of time, and it influences a lot of things. So I feel like I did at least come away with knowledge. So that makes it a little bit feel a little better.
Fair enough, fair enough. Yeah, I feel the same way. I enjoyed some of the later parts a little more than maybe you did, so I think I got a little. But yeah, it was definitely a weird ride, but I at least feel like I came out a richer, and like I have a better understanding of why the Lupin franchise is the way that it is. And if for nothing else, I feel like that was very valuable.
All right, so I think it's, I mean, I planned it this way, but I think it is so fitting to also be talking about The Great Pretender in an episode where we're talking about Lupin. So We talked about the first half of the series. Netflix released it in two parts, but really, it's just kind of one full, you know, full series finished. Has four story arcs. The last arc is like a super big arc. So we initially talked about the first three arcs, and then now we've now seen the rest of the show, and it's a, you know, a heist con man sort of series. If the opening itself, the sound of it would just make you go Lupin immediately, like the music of the opening sequence already has like a Lupin feel to it. And so it's not exactly Lupin or anything, but it is clearly very influenced by, you know, that character setup and that just beloved sort of cultural standard.
Plus, there's like a team of like ne'er-do-well criminals who all get along very variably and, you know, but work together to take down much worse criminals and, you know, fleece them for all they're worth. So there's some greater Lupin connections there as well. I mean, it isn't like Cowboy Bebop where, like, you could go, ah, yes, Spike is Lupin and Jet is Jigen.
But, yeah, there's just dynamics that feel very influenced by it. And so, you know, the story really kind of gets going when Makoto gets out of prison and he has gone to prison for basically, like, fraud. And now he's back, he's out, and he, you know, is like gonna get his life together, but he gets sort of recruited by this con man named Laurent into a scheme in America, and that sort of builds into bigger and bigger schemes and payoffs. And takes us into a fourth arc where, like, it's all connected. It, like, gets more complicated. It gets more dangerous. And it all ends up tying into kind of Makoto's history and Laurent's history, which I was not expecting, really. Just the way those things kind of end up being related.
Well, I feel like each part, like, deals with one of the main members of the crew, with Makoto being the main character, getting at least some major character insight and character development, each of them. So, but, like, the first one's mostly him, and then the middle two are the two female members of the team, and then the last one's mostly Laurent, but, you know, once again, Makoto in all four of them as well.
Yes, but I would say that Makoto's past, so each one is dealing with the past, like somebody's past, but, like, and Makoto is there, like you say, but Makoto's past also factors in heavily to the fourth arc in a way that it doesn't in the other ones.
True.
So I wasn't expecting that. I was sort of like, oh, okay, yeah, exactly. Kind of expecting from the first three that, like, we kind of get the path, the trajectory. And it's still that trajectory. It just gets more complicated, which I thought was very interesting. And really, like, had some big surprises that I was not totally, like, I wasn't predicting or anything. And then it builds up to a really big con kind of, how did you feel, Al, about sort of the, I guess, it's so, I'm trying to figure out how to talk about this show without giving, because there's a lot of, like, surprises, there's a lot of interconnectedness that I don't necessarily want to give away to people.
Have a little mixed opinion about it. I think that emotionally it did well to tie things together, but I thought the con itself at the end was the weakest of the three. I didn't like of the four. I liked kind of like the, because, you know, it's the, there's, you know, there's got to be like one or two twists. That's just how these heist series always work. I feel the, like the, you know, there's usually like at least three fake outs of like, ah, something goes wrong. Or like there's like usually a go wrong, and then there's a fake out. Then there's another go wrong, and then there's the big reveal of like how everything actually went down. And I feel like that pattern worked best in the first three. I really liked how that went. I felt like kind of the big reveal for the last caper, I was not super thrilled. I liked the like, oh, complication. Oh, correction. Ooh, twist. The big reveal. I felt like the big reveal was the, in the last one, was the weakest, in my opinion. I liked the emotional things that it did. And that's why I felt like I enjoyed the show as a whole, because at least it paid off the characters' emotional arcs the best in that. And thereby, I like, all right, good show, because that was resolved well. I just, something about the way the last scheme played out in the end, I thought was not fully to my satisfaction. I thought the other three were much stronger.
I can see what you mean. Do you think it was, because I can kind of feel it too, but it's almost like it was so big and complicated, mm-hmm. that it almost like I couldn't, like, it's like, did it stretch my credulity like too far, where I was like mm-hmm. obviously all of them stretch credulity, so it's not, but like, it's like, oh, did it like take it like one step too far, and I was like, do I really, am I really believing this? Like,
I don't want to spoil the show too much, and we'll probably have the discussion afterwards when we close out, just between you and me. It just, one or two things went a step overly complicated to be like, ah, fake out. And I was like, why? You didn't need to, like, who are you fooling other than, and like, there was one or two points where I felt like, who are you fooling but the audience with this twist? And like, if they had it, because like, they never, it seemed like at the most, because any time the audience was fooled, it seemed like they were also fooling the criminals that they were scheming. But there were one or two parts at the end of that fourth episode where, who are you fooling other than the audience? Like, you were literally, you threw in this to fool us. And that just felt disingenuous to me. But since the emotional payoff was fine, I was like, all right, whatever. Like, but if you had just made this like less complicated and less trying to fool Al rather than the criminal organizations, the two criminal organizations you were trying to rip off, I think it would have made the ending far better. So it hardly ruined it. I just, it was a little bit of a, I don't know, hubris or trying to be too clever. I don't know what, like the simpler twists of the first three cases were much more, were just, you know, KISS, keep it simple, stupid. And I just like them better.
No, I can see what you're saying. I was really interested in, like, Laurent's story.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I was really looking forward to this arc. And I feel like all of that was, like, so good and so, like, fascinating. And, like I said, how it kind of connects to Makoto and, like, all of that I thought was all really interesting. But, yeah, like, the way that it the final reveal payoff, like, wasn't my favorite either. And I will say emotionally, I was kind of really impressed a little bit with some of the things that come up in this final arc,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
because especially with Makoto and, like, you know, when we first meet him, his mom, like, he's really reeling from his mom's death and, like, how that comes into play and, like, his emotional grief and, like, what, you know, his grief process and, like, what that looks like and how that comes up, I thought was really interesting, and, like, how that relates to the person that they're conning. And, like, there were just certain really interesting moments there. And also, you know, Makoto is this kind of guy that they talk about in the series is, like, he's so good at it, but also he's, like, best when you've sort of not told him everything,
mm-hmm.
but kind of how cruel that is, and, like, how that affects him. And also the dangers of kind of going, like, undercover, where you start to adapt your life. You know, you're trying to, like, get in, right? Because you need to get in to get access. But then you start adapting your life into that life. And, like, how much is that your real life then? And, like, what is bleeding into, like, your real life and the fake life? And, you know, just, like that psyche, like, that, how that can be, like, very difficult mentally. So I just thought there was, like, a lot of really interesting topics being brought up, and then, like, how not only in the, I mean, it's sort of a running joke, but I kind of like that they start to really talk about the joke, which is, like, Makoto's whole thing, right, is, like, every time he thinks he's out, he's back in, and it's like, oh, no, this time I found, like, a legit job and I'm not, you know, I'm not going back. And then it's like, oh, and then he gets dragged back in some way. And then, like, that's sort of, like, kind of this point of humor in the first three arcs. But they kind of confront that a little bit in the fourth arc and are like, is that good? Like, what are we really doing here? To, like, what end are we involving Makoto if he doesn't actually want to be there? And there was, like, a lot of really, like, meaty, I thought, so, you know, like,
yeah, no,
stuff.
If they hadn't had that stuff, I think I would have been a lot more down on the fourth part. But since they pull that off, I'm just like, all right, you guys were just thought you were a little cleverer than you actually were. And so, you know, whatever, I'm willing to, you know, overlook that, because you kind of, you know, I don't know. There was this thing I was listening to about, like why certain endings are, like, super reviled by fans, you know, people, you know, will talk on and on about why, you know, they hate the ending of this series. And the author was...
of this series?
No, no, of just series in general. Like, you know, why people super hate the ending of Dexter and Lost. And why people like certain endings, or like classics, like the ending of Cheers and stuff. And he's like, what the person thought was, in the end, the most important thing was, how much do you feel the character stories were resolved enough that you can move on? Like, you don't have to finish, you don't have to dot every I and cross every T. But the difference between a good ending and a bad ending is, and you don't have to answer every question. What happens is, are the character arcs that I need to be filled? And are the questions that are brought up at the beginning that I need to be answered? And I feel that's what... And so, like, even a flawed ending, if it does those things, you will remember as good. And if it doesn't do those things, you'll tend to remember as highly disappointing and possibly ruining the show. And I feel like that immediately came to my mind with the show. Like, I got enough answers about questions that I had from the beginning, and I got enough ends to the characters' arcs that I thought were important, that I gave the show a thumbs up, because it gave me enough of a sense of resolution that I was happy.
I also think that overall it was pretty fun.
Mm-hmm. And once again, those first three were great. I think the capers and the, like, reveal of how we all did it was good, like, excellent.
And just sort of delightful, fast-paced, you know, visually fun, like that's pretty much top-tier badness, what they are up to. So, like, you know, I think that gives it already a little more serious tone than the other arcs. But then, yeah, like I said, there was all this emotional baggage that they were really digging into. But it still, like, had that kind of energy and that the quick wit. And, I didn't love everything about the ending, but, like, it was so good. It was just overall really, really delightful. I would watch it again in a minute. Like, I would love to see, you know, I think it concludes in a way that's not, like, doesn't feel like, oh, yeah, we're going to make more. And honestly, I hope they kind of don't make more, because I feel like the characters got to some place at the end, so it would be sort of like backtracking on them a little bit. But also, I loved everybody. I loved everyone, and I would love to, you know, I want them to be capering around forever, and I would love to, I would be happy to see that. You know, I need Cynthia and Laurent to, like, now that they have, like, figured out their past, they need to get together. They need to, like, move on, and they need to get together. So, like, I would be there for that. But, yeah, I just, like, I don't know. I feel like this was one of the best shows of the year, in my opinion.
You know, yeah, it was very enjoyable. I mean, I felt like I had a, criticize the part that need criticizing, but you know, those first three are amazing, and the last one pulls it all together. Just be prepared for some of the caper parts not to be as strong, but I feel like up until like the last part of it, there's some really good parts as well. So it isn't like totally like, ah, oh, man, it's nothing but like mediocre caper and then like, I guess, a good emotional payoff. It's just one or two small in the, you know, maybe missteps. But overall, a lovely show. Well, and man, they got Freddie Mercury's Great Pretender, and that's just, I mean, anything Freddie Mercury does is a slammer, but, you know, good choice.
Well, that was perfect, Al, because I was going to say, it also felt like just like a high production value to it. Like, it just looked great, you know, had really great color, sense of color, music. You know, it just felt like a whole big production. It just really, and it was an original, and it just, yeah, it just really felt good. That's the way to end 2020, because, boy, what a year.
I saw a sign for a shop that said, the first rule of 2021 club is you don't talk about 2020.
That is a great idea. Yeah, it really couldn't have ended any worse, personally. And I am, yeah, I'm ready to, you know, I know that we don't get like midnight and then like everything is fixed or anything, but you know, it's symbolic and everybody is ready to just put it behind them.
Till the Daleks come, Kate. Till the Daleks come.
Although I guess we're not going to put us behind us, I don't think, because I think, I'm assuming in January we're going to do our best of 2020. So, like, I guess we will still be thinking about it a little bit. But we'll only be talking about good things. We won't be talking about bad things. Therefore, still counts.